Alan Garner, Boneland, 2012. Boneland is an adult sequel to the two books for children Alan Garner published in 1960 and 1963. Colin and Susan, in The Weird Stone of Brisingamen and The Moon of Gomrath, are twins of about 12, rushing about on nonstop miraculous adventures, enduring sleeplessness, danger, and pain, and accepting supernatural events with almost superhuman placidity. At the end of the second book, Susan appears to be destined for another worldly fate or role. At the beginning of this third book, Susan has vanished. Her brother Colin has aged some 30 or 40 years, and their author nearly 50. I had to wait 17 years between books to see where the story of my own Earthsea must go, and the whole series took 33 to write. 50 years is a long time between books. Yet it seems perfectly right and natural that Alan Garner should need 5 decades to gyre back round to where he began, the legend-haunted landscape of Alderley Edge, to be able to follow his story deeper into the human psyche and the dark backward and abysm of time. Colin has become a brilliant astrophysicist, ornithologist, and all-round savant with 5 or 6 master's degrees, as well as being an outstanding cook, carpenter, and social misfit. He has total recall of everything that has happened to him since the age of 13, but has lost all memory of the years before that, along with his sister and his intrepidity. The almost phlegmatically fearless child has become an anguished, supersensitive, self-absorbed man whose incoherent obsessions are driving him mad. Colin's search for his sister and his sanity are a true quest, for the well-being of the world is also at stake. Descendant of men who danced and sang on Alderley Edge to keep the stars in their courses and bring the sun back from winter death, Colin is a shaman, heir of the shamans of the Ice Age and ages long before. He needs to find his own balance because his job is to keep the balance of the world. The rocks and caves of a reef of Triassic sandstone in Cheshire are the axis of the balance, the navel of the universe, the center that must hold. That center, of course, is also in a cave in Delphi, on an island in the Klamath River of California, in 1,000 places on Earth, and in the Earth itself as revealed to the astronaut Rusty Schweikart on a walk in space. Wherever human beings feel the depth of their connection to the world and take it as a sacred responsibility. Yet this universal connection is felt as deeply local. This place is the sacred place. More mythmaker than fantasist, Alan Garner names his chosen actual landscape minutely, feature by feature, stone by stone, relishing the old place names and the grand vocabulary of geology, weaving the words into a litany of confirmation, the endless repetition that keeps the end from coming, the rhythmic dance on the world's edge that maintains the world. Alderley Edge is the scene of a timeless ritual that must be reenacted over and over by ignorant and ephemeral mortals. Personal tragedy and redemption are subsumed in the cosmic vision. No wonder that the people of his story are less characters than masks. Types, archetypes. But as imaginative literature reclaims the territories forbidden it by modernist realism and moves back from Elfland towards the outskirts of Manchester, it treads on dangerous ground. Readers looking for more than mere adventure expect characters whose behavior and reactions are humanly comprehensible. The child twins, Colin and Susan, were semi-characterless actors in a fantasy tale. The man Colin is both a severely disturbed radio astronomer and the man chosen from his generation to look after the edge. And how to reconcile these roles and a character in a modern novel? How are the psychic sufferings of a man so anachronistically fated and so emotionally crippled to be made comprehensible? The author's success hinges partly on his division of the character into two. the 21st century scientist Colin, and an unnamed Stone Age ancestor. But in the end, his success must depend on the reader's willingness to be teased through an imaginative labyrinth by allusions, hints, puzzles, and tricks, such as unascribed dialogue and undescribed location. The process of Colin's healing, the stages of therapy, the unnesting of image within image is fascinating, but the narration demands that the reader let the author manipulate and control, just as Colin is manipulated by the analyst. And she, in the end, appears to have been a witch or goddess, who disappears in a puff of smoke. In a serious novel, this is risky business. Alan Garner can count on the trust and admiration of his readers to see him through it. My trust and admiration, though great, weren't always sufficient. No rereading has yet given me a clue to the meaning of the first 8 lines of Boneland. Well, I'll get it one of these days. Is the all-wise, wisecracking, motorcycle-riding psychoanalyst the witch crone or the moon mother? Is Susan one of the Pleiades? Well, okay. Is truth, as Garner would have it, not attainable through knowledge, only through belief? Well, maybe. Where all the teases and all the risks pay off, for me, is in the shadow story of the man who looked after the edge so long ago, the solitary artist shaman of the Ice Age. These sections of the book are told in a charged, elliptical, symbolic, highly concrete language. He cut the veil of the rock. The hooves clattered the bellowing waters below him in the dark. The lamp brought the moon from the blade, and the blade the bowl from the rock. The ice rang. You figure out what it's all about gradually as you go along. It's not mere puzzle-solving. As with reading poetry, learning another language, learning to see and think differently, the demands and rewards are intense and real. It is this element of the book, in which the obsessions come into focus and a true balance is glimpsed, that will bring me back to Boneland, knowing I'll find there what no other novelist has ever given us.